The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. I have two guests today. Returning guests Bob Lofeld, Lofeld Consulting, and Paul Murphy of Bloomberg Government. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Mark.
Nice to be here, Mark. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Paul, you have not been here before, so introduce yourself and tell people what you do over at BGov.
I'm a BGov senior data analyst. I've been there for 6 years, and I do a lot of top-level analysis of contracts data and contract trends, overall spending trends, different agencies.
Bob?
CEO and founder of Lofeld Consulting Group. It's a 13-year-old company providing services to government contractors to help them win business.
13 years now since you left Lockheed?
Yeah, 13 years now.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Indeed.
So, okay, we're going to be talking about things that contractors really need to be aware of for 2016. And we're going to start off with, Bob, you're calling it, your question is the market returning to the old normal? What do you mean?
Well, I think it is. You know, we've been in a pretty steady decline here, maybe going back 7 years all up, but the bottoms are here for us, and my projections are that DOD will turn up next year on spending, and the civilian agencies are doing reasonably well, and their budget is upward sloping as well. So the steep skid, I hope, is behind us, and I think contractors are looking forward to this year and the next with some optimism. I know Paul's got some numbers on it. So, Paul, can you chime in here and give us a Bloomberg insight?
Well, the recently passed omnibus increased the DOD authorization $18, $19 billion, $18.9 billion to be precise, $556 billion. It was less than they asked for, but more than they got last year. And the trend seems to be toward bigger procurement items. There's some winners in the budget, you know, the F-35, the Growler, the E-18, Super Hornet got some more money. There were some losers, ships, the littoral combat ships, destroyers, even IT programs like WinNT lost some ground. But in general, I see some downward pressure on overall spending. The contracts overall have declined 15 to 16% in the last 4 years, since 2012 to 2015, down from $520 billion to $438. Leading that, of course, is DOD. They're down 24% from $367 billion in primes to $279 billion. And I see this downward pressure continuing for a variety of reasons. One is the last president's budget predicted it. Two is there are signs, particularly from Senator McCain, that some of these big ticket items, the production lines on the F-35 may not be sustainable. Just last week, a GAO report came out saying that the DOD had not fulfilled a mandate in the 2013 NDAA calling for civilian personnel and civilian services contracts to decline commensurate with declines in defense personnel. And then there's other just general, you know, budget pressures, agencies struggling to conform with the budget caps and initiatives, cost-saving initiatives that we'll talk about, category management, that I think a lot of these trends are putting downward pressure on the budget.
Bob?
So I guess I'll disagree here with Paul a bit, that I think in our business we are a leading indicator of what's to come in the market, since we spend a preponderance of our time working on proposals for government contractors. And business is running sky high for us, and that's indicative of lots of deals on the street, lots of opportunity, and the government spending money. So I'll hold to my projection that this is going to be a year where the trend swings around. We've been through the worst of the contraction, and And it's been really severe. We lost $80 billion went away from the government budget, and that ripples across all the contractors and how they function, how they operate.
Okay. And civilian, may I just interject? Yeah. Civilian is actually turning around. I mean, it is slated to go up next year. So, Bob, I think you know, may have some insight into you know, particular segments of the market here.
Well, on the civilian side, I wanted to bring up what you were thinking of. You mentioned to me the LPTA on the DOD side seems less popular. Why is that?
LPTA was a grand experiment, I think, and an overreaction to a contracting budget. But the experiment didn't turn out well in many, many cases. And what happened is putting such pressure on pricing caused contractors to lower their price to the point where they were taking on far more risk than they should. And we've had some contract that didn't perform to expectation. We see them in the market because they come back out 9 months later for a rebid. But the LPTA guidance was very clear out of DOD when the undersecretary talked about when LPTA should be used. And the number one reason for using it is if you have a bid where there's no additional value to the government for a contractor exceeding requirements, then that would be appropriate for an LPTA bid. So price would become the predominant evaluation criteria. And yet in the IT services and professional services, we know across the board there's value in exceeding requirements. And the government receives that value, perceives it in the evaluations. So LPTA, that played through like a summer squall across services bids, has largely dried up. And we saw a huge industry response to it that was unfavorable towards LPTA bids and a similar response from government. So I'm hoping that's in the rearview mirror and will restore the market back to what we call rational behavior, where we do best value trade-offs in procurements to select a winner.
Well, they are calling for some large procurements to abide by LPTA terms, DISA Encore 3 being a prime example. So I think the they're going to continue experimenting with LPTA in the near term, but there are signs that DOD in particular is kind of frustrated with the results of LPTA. Frank Kendall has made some comments about, you know, his preference for returning back to rational behavior.
Yeah. Okay. And Bob, you also indicated that you saw protests up.
Well, protests are the things that get a lot of attention in the news. But as we look at the history of protests and the number of protests that are decided and filed, they're pretty consistent. And I think the last year GAO reported maybe an upswing of about 3% in protests,
which isn't huge.
It's not. It's pretty much a steady state trend for them. So you could argue, you know, procurements decreased and protests went up, but not irrationally. So all this talk we hear about every deal gets protested is far from the truth. Most of the deals go far without protest.
Well, as part of the annual GAO report on bid protests, they did report a fairly sizable increase in the number of protests, but the number of merit cases climbed just 31 from 2014, but the sustain rate went down 12%. Only 68 protests were sustained. So this is an indication that companies are getting more passionate, I would say, about the what's at stake in the results of solicitation decisions. And so they're throwing in a lot of protests, but fewer are being sustained, and the government is pushing back against, you know, what is I think increasingly viewed by companies as a necessary cost of doing business, because so much is at stake with these large procurements. You know, when you're locked out of a market for 10 years, that has a big impact on companies. And so I think the reaction on the company side is...
You're talking about contracts like SOUP and CIOCS, where the performance cycle is very long and the gene pool of contractors is very small.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And so there's a lot at stake to getting on a team, on one of the winning teams. And it's, I think, viewed as a cost of doing business to protest these major awards if you wind up on the losing side.
I think we'll see predictably protests filed on the largest procurements, these procurements that are acting as consolidators in the market and are sort of sopping up all of the work that's out there and pushing it towards a vehicle. It becomes a life or death situation for companies. They're either in the market or out. And if you're out, it's a 10-year waiting period nominally to get back in. So they'll fight appropriately for reconsideration if they get an unfavorable result in their procurement.
Okay. Now, there's a recent upswing, it seems, in on-ramps for some of these vehicles, too. Does that assuage the situation somewhat?
Maybe, but I'd put on-ramps in sort of the experimental category here. And experimental because the procurements, if you look at these multiple award contracts, they began with maybe a 5-year period of performance, and we saw over time that the period of performance crept up to now it's nominally five with a 5-year option. So we're looking at 10 years, and on the last day of the contract, you can receive a task order with a 5-year period of performance. So they have a reach of 15 years. They become really critical to companies. The compromise was to create an on-ramp scenario for losing contractors or emerging contractors, and let them come back in. What's perplexing to me is that the on-ramp has to be competed using the same RFP that was released 5 years ago. Otherwise, if you change it, you have a new procurement. So here we are going into the services market and into the IT market with an RFP that was drafted 5 years ago. It's like going out and telling an automobile dealer you want to buy a car, and here's my spec from 5 years ago. Give me one that works. It just seems a bit inconsistent. So I put them in the category of an experiment. We'll see how they turn out. And frankly, doing the on-ramp is just as complex as doing the whole procurement.
Cool. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Paul Murphy of BGov and Bob Lofeld of Lofeld Consulting. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Paul Murphy of Bloomberg Government. I almost said Eagle Eye. I did say Eagle Eye.
And long memory, Mark.
Paul and I go way back. And Bob Lofeld of Lofeld Consulting. Lofeld and I only go back about 15 years. GWACs are getting a lot of press lately, and some people are saying that use of these things is growing. GWACs, MACs, IDIQs, the kind of the whole ball of wax. What's the real picture here? Paul, start us off.
Well, I think Bob actually has a kind of interesting theory. I've been reading his stuff lately that the GWACs come in 10-year cycles. Do you want to touch on that quickly, Bob?
I will, yeah. Thanks, Paul. And when we look at the GWAC procurements, if you're in this market, you'll know that 2015 was a busy year. On GWACs in 2016 is teeing up to be the busiest ever. And we went back and looked at procurement data, and we saw that in 15 and 16, there's a spike in current procurements and projected. And in years prior to that, there was sort of a lull. And we said, well, if these things really have a 10-year period of performance, then there should have been a spike back in 05 and 06. And we went back and looked at data going back 15 years, and indeed, it's a seismic shift in procurement activity for the multiple award contracts. And the peak was huge in 2005 and 2006. It's huge in 15 and 16, and it's going to be huge again in 25 and 26. So if you miss your turn this time, you only have a 10-year waiting period, and you can get back in the game.
Oh, it's a long-term game.
Well, I think Bob is really onto something here, because I was prompted to look back at the history of GWACs, and a lot of the you know, the current contracting environment began with the reforms in the late 1990s with the Clinger-Cohen, and which actually called for the establishment of GWACs, because up to that point agencies had been trying to show their agency mojo, and each agency kind of vying for their own contract vehicles to procure essentially the same thing. And so GSA was kind of the focal point for a lot of the initial GWACs, which focused on IT. But it took a while to implement the Clinger-Cohen Act. And so a lot of these GWACs actually started up around 2000, 2001. They had five-year terms, 10-year terms. And so it kind of makes a lot of sense that it would come in 5-year, 10-year cycles, that these renewals. Because we're showing in the coming year that 13 of the top 20 opportunities we're tracking, and not all of them are GWACs, but 13 of the top 20 are set to release RFPs this year. And furthermore, we have other trends that are intensifying the use of GWACs. I mean, Brian Friel and I did some research last year indicating that there was a slight decline in the use of GWACs, which could correspond to this, confirm this kind of 10-year trend. But I think we're going to see an intensification of their use, particularly with initiatives like category management at OFPP and GSA, and with decisions by organizations like DHITS, for instance. They just canceled the major Defense Health Information Technology procurement, and they're going to utilize multiple award contracts and GWACs to fulfill their information technology requirements at the Defense Health Agency.
We're seeing, if I go back in the multiple award contract history, we talked about the procurements as task orders under the contracts, and they used to come out as a short statement of work, and you'd write a 10-page proposal, and it was due in 7 days, and you would get an award. And what we're seeing is that is morphed completely now to what we're seeing as task orders are RFPs that would normally have gone out full and open competition. They're identical to a full and open competitive RFP with a couple of hundred page response to it and 30 to 60 days to prepare a proposal. They're just traveling to the market through these GWACs. So the GWACs are becoming a path of convenience for procurements, and particularly in the IT market. And what would have been normally a full and open bid is now showing up as a task order. And the task orders are not $5 million. We're seeing them up a billion dollar task order being awarded.
Right, $967 million, something like that.
Yeah. So there's no lid on what constitutes a task order. There's no limitation to it. If an agency wants to push it out and call it a task, they can call it a task, and they can pick a vehicle. What we're seeing, interestingly, I think, is competition amongst the agencies that have vehicles going to market. And Paul mentioned the Defense Health mission found its way to a GWAC vehicle, and it began moving tasks towards CIOSP. And now they just announced that they're going to use a GSA. And then shortly after that, CIOSP cut their fee on vehicle use. So
they cut the NITAC cut the fees on all three GWACs they run.
So maybe this is good that government is now competing for market share here, and the agencies that are authorized to deliver services under a GWAC vehicle are beginning to compete amongst themselves. I think that's good for the government.
Yeah, when they canceled DHIT a couple of weeks ago, they announced which contracts they preferred to do the work on, including Alliant and Vets and 8A Stars and the GSA 70 scheduled contract, which I think is going to emerge as a real star for contractors in the coming year. But noticeably absent from that list was CIOSP. And it's interesting the timing of their announcement that they're cutting the rates on CIOSP because NITAC is up in arms now that they'd be excluded from the DHITS work. And so if the work is going to shift off DHITS, they'd like a part of it.
Well, I mean, NITAC, it's not an exclusive venue, but they were built around health IT. So I would understand that.
So as these GWAC vehicles and multiple award contracts move mainstream, there's good and bad to them, I think, at least from my point of view. is good because it's at least advertised as an expedient way to get contractors under contract to do work. I think that's positive. The things that concern me is that there's not much transparency in this market. With full and open procurements, the RFPs are made public, and the government encourages all companies to compete. Under the task order contracts, the RFPs our task requests are just distributed to the companies that own the vehicle. So we lose public visibility into what's really going on. And in a day of transparency, that's counter to the trend. So I hope somebody will look at that and begin making more data public.
Well, why would NITAC or SOUP make their RFPs or RFQs public when other entities really can't bid on them unless you're part of the contract?
I think from a understanding the market, from a holistic view as to what's going on inside of government agencies, mm-hmm. It would be, in my view, mandatory that they make that data available. For those of us who do research in the market and look at trends, right now all we get is basically a dollar amount and a title for a task and mm-hmm. what goes on underneath of it.
How did that news about that $967 million task order break? Because that was off of GWAC too.
It was. It was an Oasis award, and it was in the news. And
I know, but I mean, why was it in the news? If I was Oasis, I'd have buried that bad boy because that caused quite a stir in the market.
So that's exactly my point about
Paul,
transparency. There's probably lots of things.
Did you rat them out?
No, it wasn't from us. Although, you know, as soon as it's out, we have it in our database. I mean, that's one of the things we're doing on a day-to-day basis is, you know, pulling in these task orders, you know, publishing them as quickly as possible into the database. Because Bob is absolutely correct. I mean, the best way right now to track opportunities on task orders for long-term GWACs and IDIQs is looking at, you know, the recompete cycle. And you know any other intelligence you might gather from industry days and firsthand information.
Yeah, we on the full and open side of the market, the repository of information is much richer. We can see the old RFPs. We can often see the contracts, and you get a full understanding of what's going on in the market and how agencies are spending their money and what services they're buying. When they go into these multiple awards, it's sort of a cloaked market, if you will.
But aren't they still required to register those deals with FPDS?
Oh, that's what I'm talking about, yeah. They come out.
But they don't have to do it like that week or that month. They can wait for a while.
Well, it should come out fairly quick. I mean, as soon as they obligate funds. I mean, it's one thing to announce the award, and it's another thing to obligate funds. And so the FPDS database tracks the obligated funds.
Okay.
And DOD, of course, is on a 90-day reporting delay. So the general public doesn't see those awards until 3 months later.
So when we look at FPDS data, you can see when a task was awarded, you can see when it's going to end, you can see the dollar amount, you get the title. But as a market strategist and doing market research for companies, you'd like to be able to dig a little deeper and say, well, is this something we should be interested in as a competitor next time around? But there's no data below that surface title that you can do that analysis on. So we end up tracking, companies end up tracking lots of these, but they sort of go nowhere because there's no data beyond that.
And a lot of it in this kind of environment, this untransparent environment, a lot of it has to do with positioning and understanding agency goals and missions and just, you know, being in the right place at the right time to anticipate, you know, where these opportunities might emerge.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. We will be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guests today are Paul Murphy of BGov, Bloomberg Government, and Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting. Up next, category management. A year ago, this wasn't even a phrase. So, Paul, what is it and why is it?
Well, I think it's part of this discussion, Mark, about downward pressure on the budget. I think you know, given the budget caps, given the pressures on agencies to meet their budgets and, you know, stay within their budget, the procurement shops are looking for ways to shave money, you know, wherever they can. And they have determined that one of the ways to do this, based on experiences in England, for instance, with category management, that by, you know, bringing together the evaluation of contract vehicles under one roof, in this case, you know, GSA and OFPP, they can gain some insights into pricing, which is very important, but not the only reason for category management. They can understand contract terms and conditions and figure out which contracts are offering best value, which vehicles and vendors are performing the best. And it's starting to lead to some very important decisions. For instance, just past October, Anrong issued a decision that they're going to consolidate immediately all civilian agency buying for laptops and desktops under just three contract vehicles, the Schedule 70, the CIO commodity store, and SOUP, SOUP 4 and then SOUP 5. Now SOUP 5 is picking up. And this has the potential of displacing hundreds, if not thousands, of companies with standalone IDIQs and definitive contracts throughout the civilian agencies. And furthermore, I think category management is maybe having an impact on some of the big DoD decisions, because there was not, it was not clear in that decision that what role DoD was going to play in category management. They seem to have their own agenda as far as doing strategic sourcing. But you know, when you look at the decision-making process to cancel DHITs, they went through what's called a seven-step strategic sourcing decision-making process that led up to this. This was not a surprise decision by any stretch.
Okay.
Paul, you said that category management came about because of downward pressure on prices. And I saw it as a broader initiative than that. And when the government looked across its procurement practices, it found that it was essentially doing the same procurement multiple times in multiple agencies. And the reduction that would come out of category management is that they could do it once and let multiple agencies play on a procurement, or within a single agency do it once and not do it again. So have a broader scope to it. And the savings, a significant part of the savings would be in reducing duplication of effort. So it's not just price on the vendors, but it's within the government. Do it once, do it smartly, rather than do it a lot. And in the case of the computer buy that was announced, they would buy in civilian agencies all computers against a prescription, they began the analysis by saying the government did 10,000 computer buys a year, and that maybe they could reduce that number of contracts, 10,000 contracts, down to just a few and essentially get to the same place. So if we could save contracting officers from putting out 9,000 other contracts, this would be a huge savings for the government.
Yeah, and the savings is not just on the government side, but it's on the company side too, because companies will simply have, you know, fewer contracts to manage. But the problem, you know, for a lot of vendors is going to be making sure you're on the contracts that the OFPP wants to manage.
Well, 70 is still open for pretty much anybody that wants to go for it, so that's still part of the play. But as far as CIO, CS, and SOUP 5 go, if you're not there, you're not there.
Yeah, I think it's on a case-by-case basis, you know, whether they have a set of criteria that they're evaluating these contracts by, and if they conform to OFPP and GSA standards for consolidated contracts, those vehicles could find their way onto the good list, so to speak.
Yeah, and you're right about Schedule 70, that's an open application. Basically, any company that's in the market can file with GSA and get a Schedule 70 contract. You know, they have to meet certain requirements, but it's open enrollment. You can get it whenever you decide to do it. The others, NASA SOUP and COSP, they're part of the 10-year club, or maybe the five and a fraction year club, depending right. on the outcome of on-ramps. But those are closed communities. Although if you look at
if a manufacturer wants and they find a member of the club and say, hey, you want to carry our product, and you incentivize the contract holder to.
So in that case, I think it's fine. There's ample opportunity to get awards out to small business and small disadvantaged business and to large companies. So the portfolio of contracts is a pretty good choice. The position that they have taken looks a lot like what NASA did in its own right more than 15 years ago when it put out a contract basically outsourcing the desktop as a services buy. And that contract has been fairly successful in the NASA community where they, this time, instead of the contractor owning the desktop infrastructure, the government will own it. But it'll be provided with a refresh cycle that they look at the standard configurations every 6 months. And that's the same thing that they did under ACES and ODIN. And they'll aggregate demand and try to have a refresh cycle that runs every 4 years or every fifth year. You get a new desktop and a new printer and a monitor. So it looks a lot like what NASA had experimented with and had I think, a successful outcome. The only difference here from the NASA deal is that the government will own the equipment, and that's probably the right choice here.
I think something that's not given a lot of attention but needs to be addressed is the personal aspect of all this. This, I think, category management initiative is going to be enormously disruptive to a lot of the personal relationships that companies have built up over the years with agencies that they've been doing business with. And if the number of contract vehicles is going to be reduced, as it clearly is, how does that impact, how can the government continue to do the same level of business and provide, and companies provide the same level of support when a lot of these personal relationships have are simply going away? But I think it ties into this whole discussion about downward pressure on pricing, because I think one of the ways they're dealing with this consolidation of contracts is by making the evaluation of contracts more quantitative. And you can read LPTA into that as much or as little as you want, but I think that's one of the aspects, the outcomes of all this, is that they have to do these deals quickly. Some of them, as you can, as Bob was saying, are very large, and so they have to find some way of standardizing the evaluation of these bids. And I think we're going to see a lot more emphasis on numeric evaluations of company scorecards, if you will, in the decision making process.
In the computer hardware buy, there's five standard categories for your desktop and laptop, and that makes it very easy for the government then to compare prices against each bidder, and to look at the trends in pricing. And in the day when they had 10,000 contracts out there, everybody was buying a one-off, and you probably don't need that. So I'm good with the standardization. I think it's okay, particularly since they refreshed.
Do you think the five configurations is sufficient?
Yeah, I do.
I think it's kind of 80-20 rule. They probably looked around and figured 80% of the requirements. Yeah,
so the bad thing is the cultural thing that they call these things personal computers. Everybody thinks it's theirs personally, and they should spec it themselves. But they should have called them commodity computers, and we wouldn't have any issues about five categories then.
Well, talk to Ann.
There we go. she's listening to your show. I'm sure.
I would certainly hope so. Which takes us to, you're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. And we will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting, lohfeldconsulting.com, LOHFELD consulting.com. Bloomberg, is it Bloomberg Gov, BGov?
Yes, that's the preferred
What's the URL?
www.bgov.com.
BGov.com, just the letter B. So, final segment. I want to know about, Bob, we have discussed previously the commoditization of services. What a rude concept. You know, what's going on here? What's the problem from the contractor perspective?
If I could speak from an industry perspective, it would say that we as government contractors recognize that there will be continued downward pressure on prices and downward pressure on profit margins within government contractors. And yet shareholders who have invested in these companies are not thrilled about the prospect of working in a market that has been declining and one that has a huge price pressure and margin pressures. So companies are examining, do they want to stay in this business? And we've had great companies who have become huge stakeholders in the government IT services market, particularly IT services and professional services market, question whether they should stay or not. And it's a tectonic shift in market strategy for these firms. We saw Computer Sciences Corporation split itself and aggregate with SRA on the government side, but what it did was release CSC to pursue commercial markets where the margins are arguably better. Lockheed Martin is exploring that same direction. They went out and bought Sikorsky, which I think is a great addition to the Lockheed Martin portfolio. And they've taken their IS and GS business, their lower margin business, and they're exploring whether or not they should sell it off. If they do, it's a great way to gain market share in the high technology field with Sikorsky and stay in a higher margin business. So they're looking at it. We saw L3 just recently sell off a division to Engility, and we think Northrop Grumman may be showing signs of making similar moves. And I hear that Booz Allen is exploring commercial markets and international markets and putting emphasis in that direction. So some of our traditional players in this large government market are rethinking their strategy and how that plays out.
That's a lot of institutional knowledge taking a walk.
It is and it isn't. Taking a walk, I think Bob's raising some valid points. But I think you can also look at it from the perspective of, if we're talking about category management, contract mm-hmm. consolidation, the intensification of use of GWACs. I think a lot of this is being driven by positioning on contracts. I think in part, you know, when you look at the CSC-SRA merger, you know, they become the second largest, you know, pure IT services company. You know, you look at CACI's acquisition of L3. I mean, when they do these mergers, it bumps them up several notches on bids like Alliant. And I think there are some legitimate, you know, frustrations with, you know, companies who, you know, for years have, you know, been doing, you know, sophisticated, somewhat high margin services work on contracts like Encore. But, you know, if Encore is going to move to low price, technically acceptable, you know, that's going to cause companies to shop their other contracts where, you know, maybe the margins are higher. And so I think a lot of this can be viewed from, you know, positioning on some of these vehicles for wins, you know, 10-year wins in this coming year. As we were talking about, 13 of the 20 top opportunities are going out for a bid this year.
Well, you know, you got to start that research early if you want to play on one of these big GWACs or IDIQs anyway. You don't come late into the game and assume you're going to get in the starting lineup.
You bet. And we're seeing a real intensification in the analysis of task orders on a lot of these contracts. People studying, you know, the history of the task orders on Alliant 1, for instance, as they did on, you know, SOUP 4, you know, leading up to the award of SOUP 5. People are looking, you know, particularly at, you know, when the what the tails are on these contracts. So, you know, when what the last opportunities are that will be solicited on contracts, you know, like Alliant 1, as they transition to Alliant 2. I mean, there's a lot of very interesting dynamics going on here.
Robert?
I think it'll be an interesting year going forward and lots of changes in motion. It'll take a while to see how it plays out, but we see companies rekindling their go-to-market strategy and recognizing that optimism is out there. We're seeing companies in our practice, they come to us and they say, we're not winning like we used to. What are we doing wrong? What should we be doing to play smarter? How can we improve our processes? And are there things in our process that are old and obsolete? So we're seeing lots of interest in tuning up business acquisition processes. That's been good for us. With the contraction in the market, companies let go a lot of resources, as everyone had to do to prepare for a more price-competitive market. And we're seeing now with the resurgence in bid opportunities that they need resources to do capture and do proposal work. So that's been good for us, and they're putting more emphasis in market strategy and pipeline development. So from a support contractor point of view, it's been a real turnaround in the market. And probably the third thing that I think is different is we're seeing a resurgence of the interest in training. And garment contractors are realizing they have new players in their midst and new people on staff, and they need to get back to basics and train.
And you've got four or five courses that you bring to the market on that, the business development side.
We've introduced three new classes this year. One is one I've been wanting to do for a longest time. It's on business development for project managers. So all those contractor employees that have what we call the high ground of visibility, they're in contact with their customer every day. A lot of them are on site. They need to understand the role and their role in business development. And we have a new class on winning garment-wide acquisition contracts and multiple award contracts, and then how to get real money out of them after you've been a recipient of an award. And then a class on creating high-scoring proposals that's built around strength-based solutioning, one of our concepts, and embedded in that class is discussion about how to better review and evaluate your own proposals during development.
Yeah, and so, Bloomberg adds to the education. You know, I get invitations to webinars from you guys at least a couple of times a month, and as well as briefings that you're doing live. So
we have a category management a webinar coming up on the 28th that your listeners are welcome to join.
Go to bgov.com, look up, events, and look for that category management thing, which we were discussing just a few moments ago. When I attend the Bloomberg live events, there's always really, really good information, as well as great networking. So I have not yet attended one of the webinars, as they all seem to conflict either with one of my sessions or a client visit or something. But I'll get there. I'll get there, honest.
Mm-hmm. Our doors are open.
One would hope that you're also seeing on when Bob's talking about the business development for project managers, they need the research. So one would hope that you see an uptick in subscribers for the core service that you guys are offering.
Well, we're seeing an intensification of use of the data, and people are doing it in really smart ways. And we're also seeing the government's increased use in our data. So I think a lot of the enhancements and context that Bloomberg wraps around the data is really coming to bear on this very intense and dynamic new year in federal procurement.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in. Bob, good luck with the new classes.
Thanks, Mark.
Paul, thank you for coming on the show. This is not my day job. Like Mr. Lofeld, I offer a variety of courses, but mine are on the marketing side of the universe. The Government Market Master Program is a certificate-based program for marketing, and look me up at federaldirect.net for information on that. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.